mystery about the Fed.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. For about a year and a half, every time the Federal Reserve met, we said the same thing. It's a done deal. They're going to raise interest rates another quarter point. And they did 17 times in a row. But then this summer, the Fed finally stopped, and the finger's been on the pause button ever since. Today, the Fed governors meet again, and everybody's saying the same thing. Here's Bob Moon.
Fed watchers generally believe the monetary policymakers will leave interest rates where they are once again and let the economy coast for a while. But Commerce Bank Chief Economist Joel Naroff says what happens further down the road all depends.
The Fed is trying something that we haven't seen before.
Naroff says normally the central bank has hit the brakes hard to control inflation rather than just easing up on the gas, as it did by raising interest rates gradually. So it may not be clear for a few more months if that's been just enough to break the momentum of higher prices. In fact, when asked whether interest rates will eventually be heading down or up, Naroff jokingly answered, yes.
While the expectation is that they won't have to raise rates, we can't assume that the economy does slow enough to ease inflation, there may be some issues about raising rates again.
For the moment, though, Naroff and numerous other experts think the Fed is more likely to have to hit the economic accelerator before too long by lowering interest rates, perhaps by next spring. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Two companies gave Wall Street a big boost yesterday, Walmart and Google. Walmart shares helped push the Dow to another closing high. It gained 114 points, almost 1%, to 12,116. The S&P 500 was up 0.6 to 1,377. The NASDAQ climbed 0.5% to 2,355. Google stock rallied to a new all-time high, $484 a share. Walmart shares got a boost because the company said it's going to take it easy on the growth next year. Sam Eaton reports.
Walmart opened 340 new stores last year, but it expects to open just over 300 in the coming fiscal year. Retail analyst Richard Hastings says it's all part of a well-laid plan.
Walmart is not revising its growth story in North America because there's anything wrong with the business. It's just they have to begin to think about a different store format, smaller size, and enter into much more complicated, densely populated areas.
In other words, urban areas where land is more expensive and consumers have been flocking to hipper rivals like Target. Target's growth in sales has outpaced Walmart by a factor of 5. But Hastings says that's all relative when you consider Walmart's scale. The retail giant still adds $200 million in additional sales to its bottom line every month. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
They called him greedy, a liar, and a drunk. And former Enron CEO Jeffrey Skilling just had to sit and take it. His ex-employee spoke at Skilling's sentencing yesterday in a Houston courtroom. Then the judge handed down the punishment, 24 years and 4 months in prison. Skilling is 52 years old. This is Marketplace. Let's see what we have in the earnings pile this morning. Netflix, the online video rental company, saw profits jump 84% in the third quarter. Netflix lured in 500,000 new subscribers. Investors were very impressed. Stock price climbed 13%. Wall Street wasn't as pleased with Kraft Foods. The company's profits were up 11%, but analysts were disappointed with lackluster sales growth. Shares fell about 4% in after-hours trading. American Express beat Wall Street projections. Earnings were 76 cents a share. The company added more than 2 million credit cards last quarter, and people spent 15% more. Today, we'll get earnings reports from JetBlue, Amazon, and Whirlpool. The Morning Report comes to you from American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the Medtronic Foundation, supporting the National Organization for Rare Disorders' mission to identify, treat, and cure overlooked and undertreated health conditions. More at rarediseases.org. By Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by The Economist magazine, which not only tells what's happening each week, but why. The Economist. at newsstands, in bookstores, and at economist.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Scott Jagow.
All around America, men and women worry about their jobs.
Iraq, healthcare,
energy and education.
What you want?
That means it's time for our series, The Real Agenda. With the midterm elections coming up, we're looking at the economic issues people really care about, the ones the politicians might not be addressing. Today we hear from Jim Carrier. He's an author and a former newspaper editor.
This year, I asked Uncle Sam to keep his promise to support me in old age. I started taking Social Security. I didn't retire. I'm still writing. But I had a rough year, losing everything in Katrina in New Orleans. The one thing I could count on was that Social Security check. At 62, I could draw $1,400 a month in perpetuity, $17,000 a year. That would pay the rent while I freelanced. But as I waited for that first check, political blather about fixing a broken system made me feel a little guilty. Suddenly, after 40 years of paying taxes, I was a burden to the nation. If I lived to 85, I would cost taxpayers, including my daughter, nearly $400,000. My entitlement had become an epithet, like welfare queen. Then I looked at all the numbers. I was surprised to learn that over 41 years, I made $1 million. The best year was $70,000. The average was $27,000. It went for houses, food, gas, a kid. But my total Social Security tax for four decades was only $63,000. I didn't even miss it. And in 16 of those years, my income hit the government ceiling. I wish they'd taken more. But what if Social Security hadn't existed? Would I have set aside hundreds of thousands to provide for myself? Not likely. I proved that 10 years ago when I cashed an annuity and bought a sailboat. I sailed to Spain and had lots of fun, but as an investment, it was worse than Enron. So this idea of privatizing, of letting me own my retirement, would have been another Katrina. But if Uncle Sam had put my $63,000 in an S&P 500 index fund, it would be worth more than $500,000. If he'd bought T-bills, my nest egg would total $155,000. And that's not counting the employer's share, which would double those returns, plenty to pay me $17,000 until I'm dead. This election, nobody's talking about Social Security. Too bad. While we're busy working, Congress could fix the system and stop passing the buck to our kids. Uncle Sam could take a little bit more out of each paycheck, invest it safely on our behalf, and keep his promise with our money.
Jim Carrier is a freelance writer in Montgomery, Alabama. Check out more of The Real Agenda online at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.